Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the KE Report weekend show, the second to last weekend show of 2025. Corey and Shad here, your hosts again for this weekend's edition. And on this weekend show, we're going to be taking more of a step back, talking to a couple generalists, getting their kind of recap of 2025, outlook into 2026, whether that be near term or longer term, and really trying to, again, make sense of where these markets are going, because it's been another good year for the broad averages. But there's been a lot for us to talk about throughout the year in terms of what's been leading these markets, a rotation of money. And quite frankly, there's still, I think, a pessimistic attitude out there, sentiment towards these markets. So a lot for us to get into this weekend show. And just as a reminder, please join us on YouTube. Just search The KE Report. Subscribe to our channel. Like and listen to the videos. Also, check us out on Twitter or X and Substack. Just search again, The KE Report. And you can also find all our daily editorials and company updates on our website, kereport.com. Let's get into this weekend show, kicking off with Dana Lyons. Dana is a fund manager and editor of the Lion Share Pro website. We talk with Dana about every 2 weeks, and we're going to be wrapping up the year with him in these first two segments of the weekend show. So Dana, let's just start off with a broad comment here. You're very much a technical trader. You stick to what your models are telling you about broad averages and individual areas of the market. Just curious, do you care at all, or do your models care at all about the time of the year that we're in, or even more so, how these markets end and how you compare it to past years?
Yeah, thanks, Corey. Generally, not. We don't put a lot of stock, no pun intended, into that, because we have our, you know, as you mentioned, we have our quantitative models that a lot of that, the inputs come from various internal breadth measures, some sentiment, smart, dumb money inputs, but a lot of broad market types of measurements just to gauge what the overall market is doing right now. Are most stocks going up, most stocks going down? So we don't have any seasonality components that directly feed into those models. So I would say there are no direct inputs from seasonality that really direct our investing. But I would there are, you know, some strategies and some strategic track records from seasonality models and cycle models that are pretty compelling when looking back. Not that we use them, but just perusing their track records, it's pretty compelling. So I would say we use those types of seasonality or a cycle types of analyses as more or less a gentle headwind or tailwind for whatever our posture is anyway. So entering the second half of December, for example, it's generally a pretty bullish or positive seasonal period of the year. So our models right now are bullish. So combining that with a positive seasonality here going into the end of the year, I would say maybe that allows us to maybe step on the gas a little bit more aggressively than we generally would. But again, that's only a slight or a minor adjustment based on seasonality that we would make.
Well, Dana, just to piggyback on seasonality and sentiment, I asked you this off mic, but I think it'd be good for the benefit of our listeners just to hear your answer. I was asking about in January, a lot of people reposition, or sometimes the end of the year, they reposition their weightings or they allocate things differently. They do some window dressing if they're an institution to close the year a certain way, but then they reposition in the new year. Do you watch for any of that under the surface as far as different sectors increasing in weight or maybe getting momentum going or relative strength to certain sectors that may change as we enter the first quarter of next year?
You know, there are so many machinations related to what you mentioned and other reasons that it's really hard to anticipate, you know, what types of waves are going to be going on underneath the surface, not related to whatever's happening in the market organically, you know, what sort of exogenous forces are going to be exerted on the market due to tax purposes, rebalancing, that type of thing. So we don't really, again, we'll stick to our quantitative models in terms of our investment posture and don't really try to game any of those year end, year beginning types of strategies. I will say January, like you mentioned, January tends to be a kind of a tricky or an odd month in that you'll see it kind of more so than any other month, not kind of correlated to what was going on beforehand or maybe what comes afterwards based on what happens in January in our studies that we have seen. So January can be a little bit quirky. The best we can do is kind of ignore the quirkiness and stick to our models and stick to our bread and butter that have the models that have served us so well, you know, for decades and decades, but just cognizant of the fact that there might be some machinations, like I said, going on under the surface related to the year end or new year, the turning of the new year that might distort things or cause market action that raises your eyebrows, but just know that that might have something to do with, you know, the new year stuff and not necessarily pertaining to something organic, an organic trend emerging within the market in general.
So Dan, if we step maybe a little aside from your models, I'm curious about longer term trends or cycles, where we might be, what you might follow as we're heading into 2026 to give us more of a not so short term, but longer term outlook.
Yeah, so cycle, you know, probably the most consistent cycle might be like the four-year cycle. You could call it the presidential cycle. They're all, you know, intertwined. I would say interesting. There are a couple of interesting junctures within that cycle. One would be the second year of the presidential term entering, you know, approaching the midterms next fall. Generally, the first quarter, so the first quarter of 2026, it would be tends to be a pretty bullish or positive quarter historically. And then you get into the second and third quarter of the second year, which would be next year. And those are the only back-to-back historically negative quarters within the four-year cycle, you know, on average. So I would say if markets, you know, resort to that historical trend, we might see a nice first quarter to start 2026 and then get into some headwinds over the subsequent, you know, second and third quarter if history is to be any gauge. And looking at maybe kind of how our models are setting up, kind of how the broad market is setting up right now. To us, it is set up for further upside here, and then maybe some sort of an exhaustive type of topping scenario, whether it's a long-term top, whether it's just an intermediate-term top that leads into that midterm type of struggle, remains to be seen. But I would say, generally, the way things are set up now, I could foresee that type of market action, you know, unfolding over the next several quarters.
Well, Dana, let's dial it back down to maybe more the near-term, medium-term outlook that your models have. You know, we've seen the markets broaden out. We've seen more participation from the small caps and the mid caps. It's not just the mega cap tech stocks leading the charge. Anything there changing in your models as far as broader participation?
Not at all. You know, we had an interesting, I would say, fourth quarter here. Towards the end of October, our models started weakening, even with the major averages continuing to hit new highs. We got a sell signal in early to mid-November, our first sell signal since mid-December of last year, which was interesting and indicative of a kind of a broad weakening or deterioration, the foundation of the rally, but below the surface, the broad market. And so that led to, you know, the volatility, the corrective action we saw throughout the rest of November up until about Thanksgiving. Since then, it's been kind of interesting action. You've had, whereas you had, you know, large cap growth and tech leading the way, it's been the relative strength leader for a long time. we've kind of flip-flopped since that bottom in late November. It's been, as you mentioned, the broad market re-emerging, small caps re-emerging, that broader market adopting the new relative strength, even as kind of the tech and large cap growth, the NASDAQ, that type of sector has kind of lost its leadership mantle, is now really kind of the laggard in the market. And I think probably got overowned, probably got a little bit too frothy in terms of sentiment there. And you've seen some rotation, as Corey has mentioned, from that large cap tech into kind of the broader sector. And that is, from our perspective and our modeling perspective, that is a pretty healthy or constructive type of development. And then we see a pretty constructive setup here for further upside in the broad market.
Now, does this have anything to do with the potential environment where we could see lower rates? The bond market has, I guess, rebounded a little, or has sold off a little bit just this month as rates have rebounded. But all we're hearing about is potentially rate cuts next year when Trump gets his guy at the Fed. What are you seeing in the markets? And does it play into the bigger picture of potentially lower rates? And that's why small caps are doing well.
Yeah, that's the argument. And I would say, you know us, we seldom ask why, because as investment managers, we don't really need to know why something is happening, just as long as we know what is happening. So that would certainly play into the narrative of the small cap or the broad market reemerging in a leadership role, which we are starting to see. And that would, you know, historically from the narrative, that would play into that kind of lower rates narrative. So maybe that tells us what's going to happen down the pike. But again, like I said, we really don't care why something is happening. That usually is plays out down the road. You know, you see a move like last, maybe a year ago, when we saw the deterioration in the broader market, the small caps and in the internals of the market, that after a brief rebound into, you know, January, February of last year, especially in the large caps, you saw the big correction correlated with the tariff news headlines into the spring. And you never know what's coming down the pike, why, what's causing the market action. There's always a reason ascribed for that later on. So why did the market deteriorate at the end of 24? Maybe they anticipated, you know, the tariff stuff coming and the correction is going to occur there. You don't know. But again, all we care about is reading the tea leaves at what is happening. And right now, it's kind of an opposite, kind of a flip-flop scenario from a year ago when the broader market was starting to deteriorate. Now it's really kind of, as you mentioned, starting to reemerge in a leadership role.
Well, Dana, as we look at that broader market, are there any subsectors within it that really have your attention for relative strength? You know, there's a big gamut out there: healthcare, financials, utilities, consumer staples, consumer discretionary, commodities. Anything really ringing your bell right now?
Well, you mentioned a good handful of them. You know, consumer discretionary is starting to emerge. Industrials look great. Financials look great in terms of some of the broader sectors. Healthcare still looks great. Healthcare is something that if you don't have an allocation to right now, we saw a nice breakout over the last month or so, and you've seen a bit of a pullback or give back in that, might be setting up for a nice buying opportunity here around here. Biotech as well. So there's really no shortage again. And that's what we like to see. We like to see some good broad swath of potential leadership groups in order to signify, you know, a stronger, more durable type of a bull market rather than, you know, a narrow type of a rally that we saw, you know, really, especially leading into that August 24 kind of correction, where you saw it just ended up being like the Mag 7, and that was not enough to prop up the market. So yes, I saw that correction, but now we're seeing a pretty broad selection of potential relative strength investment groups right now.
Dana, I'm curious your thought on that whole buy the dip mentality, where this year was another year where when we saw dips, mostly news event worthy, They were bought back extremely quickly. That April drop, that one, I guess, lasted a little while. That was about a month, just over a month long, and then really ended with a bang. But again, it got bought back quickly. Then we had another dip in November, which was then bought back very quickly. Has this just been another year that reaffirms to people that buy the dip? Whenever you see a dip, you might as well jump in because it just comes roaring back.
Yeah, and that plays into maybe the longer term cycle factors where, okay, we're still in a kind of a secular bull market. We're not into the phase where, okay, we want to be selling strength for the next couple of years, for example. So we're still in a bull market. So any major corrective action that we get, you want to be certainly buying the dip. And, you know, the March, April move would, I would characterize that as a pretty serious correction, given the losses that we sustained. So you got in trouble trying to buy that dip, whereas just recently it was a little bit different. You know, we had a more really moderate sell-off in November, especially considering that our models turned negative and then flip-flop back positive pretty quickly. But typically when our models turn negative, you get more of a drawn out or correction like we did back in the spring. But it was interesting to us to see things rebound so quickly. And I guess one factor that has kind of played into that this year is kind of, I think maybe the proliferation and the number of hedging instruments. Now it seems that especially back in March, April, you saw so right at the bottom, you saw so much hedging activities and so much bearish sentiment all of a sudden after they had tried to buy the dip all the way down. Interestingly, in November, you saw a really good uptick in hedging activity and bearishness despite the more moderate pullback. And I think that fed into really that the strong rebound that we've seen out of that. So I think that one thing that the proliferation of those new hedging instruments give us is more data from really a smart dumb money kind of positioning, or really it's the same thing as saying, you know, short-term sentiment measures. There's more data now that we can use to measure kind of short-term investor sentiment. And that obviously the more data we have, the more helpful certainly it could be, at least at extremes, like we saw in late November. I would say right now we're more neutral. So sentiment is very unhelpful at neutral points. And I would say that's where we're at now. But when you get those extremes, it can be very helpful.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot more people doing zero-day options, inverse ETFs, leveraged inverse ETFs. And so when you can look at some of the patterns in those, you do pick up on the money flows. Well, Dana, you know, we got to ask you about the commodity sector. A lot of our listeners in the resource sector, been a bang-up year for the precious metals, even the base metals and critical minerals. Any thoughts? Let's maybe start with the precious metals. What do you think of gold and silver, where they're at closing the year?
Yeah, still love the precious metals. We had that kind of blow off into, I guess, October. And then we said, well, probably going to be range bound for a while. Silver didn't last that long in that range bound trade before breaking out. And that certainly was constructive. Same thing with copper. Gold now knocking on the door of those former highs. So probably eventually that breaks out as well. Same thing with the miners. So anything hitting all-time highs, you can't be too bearish on those. So we'll keep riding those trends, you know, as long as they last. As far as the rest of the commodity space, I don't see a whole lot, but that's fine. Precious metals and the miners, they're giving us enough action right there and have really, really fortified our portfolio all year. So that's been probably, I would say, obviously, probably the best trend of the year outside of maybe some of the market timing signals we've had in the broad market. It's just been the steady strength of precious metals and the miners.
Yeah, it really has been. They've just been outperforming the markets all year and quite a bit. So just curious, from a more generalist standpoint here, Dana, in terms of your exposure to the precious metals, how would you rank it throughout your history? Is this the most exposed you've been to it? Is this one of the best precious metals markets you've seen? Could you still build up exposure to it? Give us some insights on that, kind of your history and the current exposure you have.
Okay, so in my career, which is, 30 years or so, definitely by far the best precious metals market that I've ever seen. You know, we had, early 2000s was good, or like the highs into, 2011. But that was more kind of a flash in the pan type of movie. It had such a swift reversal of those moves, especially in silver, that was not as sustainable looking as it seems to be now. Now, we've had such a huge run that I don't think, we've doubled. If you look at the price of gold, for example, we've doubled in the last, I guess, just over a year, or maybe a year and a half, we doubled. I wouldn't say we're necessarily bound to double over the next year and a half again. I wouldn't count on that. Maybe the miners are more set up for that because they haven't had as big of a run versus their relative range, their prior range that gold has had, maybe silver and copper too. But in terms of a trend, this is certainly the strongest trend I've ever seen in my career across the precious metals space, whether it's gold, silver, or copper, and especially the equities as well. It's the strongest looking trend or move that I've seen. So is it going to be straight up forever? Obviously not. And you have to have an open mind and be able to get out of harm's way when the data suggests it. But right now, I would say it's still very constructive. The signs are very constructive. I would just say feel yourself against, chasing. You'll get opportunities to buy on pullbacks, and I that's what I would focus on, as opposed to, I know it's human nature. The more things go up, the more bullish one gets, but I would try to avoid the FOMO, avoid the chasing, that generally keeps you out of harm's way.
Well, Dana, just one more sector to squeeze in here real quick is your thoughts on the cryptoverse. Bitcoin and Ethereum had a rocking year, have had a pretty big pullback. Where do you think what's the lay of the land here as we wrap up 2025 with Bitcoin and Ethereum?
Yeah, we were constructive on the two of them, about a month ago, looking for a consolidation and then perhaps set up for another up leg, coinciding with another up leg in most of risk assets like we're seeing in the equity market. That has not unfolded. In fact, we've seen enough technical damage in both Bitcoin and Ethereum where we see a lot more attractive sources for our money out there right now than those two. So we would be, until we can decisively reclaim some technical levels in both of those cryptos, I would be selling into rallies into resistance. And again, it's not like there's a dearth of attractive options for your money right now. So we're content with spreading around in many of the equity spaces and some of the resource spaces.
All right, Dana, we'll wrap it up here. Thank you so much for taking time with us throughout 2025, and I look forward to chatting with you in 2026 to just hear what your models are telling you. As far as I'm concerned, you have been almost spot on with judging some of these turns in the markets and where the money has rotated to in a wide range of sectors. I always find it very valuable for myself hearing from you on such a regular basis. So everyone, please click the link in the show notes or search the Lion's Share Pro. That's where you can follow along with Dana and his trading strategies and portfolio management. Everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back. And Dana, I hope you have a very happy holidays. Happy New Year. We'll chat with you in 2026.
Sounds great. Happy holidays and happy New Year to you too.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.